Job growth is a little slower than expected. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. The U.S. added 179,000 private sector jobs in November, according to ADP and Moody's Analytics. That is a little below what surveys show Wall Street was expecting. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Grant Thornton.
Is it still enough to bring more people into the labor force and over time continue to push the unemployment rate down? But clearly we're starting to see the sort of fault lines in the outlook for the U.S. economy. We're not into a recession yet, but we're starting to see the precursors of a recession.
I saw your tweet. You predicted a recession might come in 2020. Why then, and is it avoidable?
All of what we're facing, everything from trade uncertainties, tariffs, interest rate increases, all of these things are policies that could be adjusted to elongate the expansion and avert a recession. Right now, it doesn't look like we're doing that. In fact, the only one that seems to be awake at the wheel is the Federal Reserve, which is in the process of reassessing what they're going to need to do in 2019 versus 2018.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at Grant Thornton. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Wells Fargo is firing 36 managers over the creation of fake bank accounts, according to the Wall Street Journal. The fraudulent accounts were revealed 2 years ago and resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars in fines. This morning, we get new numbers on factory orders in the U.S. Earlier this year, manufacturing grew at a brisk pace. But lately, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, there are signs that growth is slowing.
The slowdown is in factory orders from businesses in the market for machinery, computers, and electronics to make other stuff. Gregory Dacko is with Oxford Economics.
We're no longer growing at the very strong pace that we were observing at the end of 2017 and into early 2018. So there's been a noticeable slowdown in business investment.
One reason, he says, the tax cut boost from a year ago is fading and factories are feeling it. For manufacturers that export, Gad Levinon of the Conference Board Business Group says they face several headwinds.
The slowdown in the rest of the world and then the strength of the dollar that makes export less profitable and potential impact of tariffs.
But there is good news. Levinon says even as business orders are slowing, American consumer demand for factory goods remains strong. And in his view, it'll be the consumer that keeps pulling the U.S. economy along. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
A Salvation Army worker in Jefferson City, Missouri, found more than just spare change in one of those red donation kettles. Someone dropped in a rare 1998 American Eagle 1 ounce gold coin. It's worth $1,300.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is on a mission that drives what we do every day to increase the economic intelligence of all of us. But we can't do it alone. Become a Marketplace investor today in whatever amount you choose, and your donation will go twice as far, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate today at Marketplace.org.
Negotiators from both sides of Yemen's brutal civil war are meeting in Sweden today. The Yemeni government, supported by Saudi Arabia and indirectly by the U.S., have been fighting Houthi rebels supported by Iran. The result has been death and starvation. Out of a population of 27 million, nearly 23 million Yemenis are now dependent on aid to survive. The UN says the conflict could soon produce the world's worst famine in 100 years. Rama Hansraj is Yemen Country Director for Relief International. We reached her in Sana'a. Good morning, or good evening.
Good evening.
Can you tell us what you're seeing on the ground?
We are a bit alarmed with the dramatic deterioration in the situation over the recent months in Yemen, where millions of people's lives are basically at risk of famine, and we have almost 2.3 million IDPs moving around in the country.
And IDPs is internally displaced people?
Yes.
It is one thing for a relief organization to, say, come in after an earthquake and, you know, provide what's needed. It must be a totally different proposition to be a relief organization in a war zone. How do you get aid to civilians in a situation where people are literally shooting at one another?
It has been quite difficult for us to reach out to the most needy populations in Yemen, especially in the front lines of the conflict. And we do have very good relationships with the authorities. But it's obvious that in such a situation where, you know, it's difficult to get humanitarian access while we are dealing with a lot of bureaucratic impediments on ground.
One of your biggest aid programs involves giving out cash or cash vouchers. Why cash in a situation like this?
At Relief International, we do a combination of direct food distribution, we do vouchers, and we do cash. We prefer to provide cash to the families. There are two major reasons for this. One is people should access aid with full dignity, and we believe that providing cash instead of just distributing food gives them the dignity and, you know, the opportunity of buying whatever they would like to. Plus, we also believe that infusing cash, the families able to buy, will also sustain the local markets, especially the small and marginal traders who are operational in Yemen.
Cash helps more than just the people who would use it to buy the food. It helps the people that the food is purchased from. It has sort of knock-on effects. But how do you get the cash in and distribute it? I mean, there's no functioning central bank there. You just like fly out crates of cash?
I mean, honestly, in Yemen, yes, there are difficulties with banking system, but the private banks are still operational. And we do use private banks to get these aid to the families.
Rama Hansraj is the Yemen Country Director for Relief International. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.